Session number 11377, Reel 14.
Mr. Bill Bateman, Reel 14. You were in Aleppo, Mr. Bateman, and the armistice had come with the French. Did you get much contact with any of the French troops?
No contact at all. We'd been made in the Signal Corps, see, I'd come up after they'd cleaned them all out, and where they went to, I don't know. There was the Cingalese, and then there was all these foreign fleet. I think they went to the various places. What they did with them, I don't know. But last one, they said that's what the lads told us when I got back. They said we weren't fighting Austria, and we were fighting the British now, so they didn't bother. Aleppo there, the barracks was stood right on a hilltop. They were modern, the brick garage, they were two-storey, just like the ones we used to have in India. And well ventilated, and that, but the lads said they were terribly mucky, filthy, as they. And the beds were wood, they were like canvas to put the blanket on, and no mattresses. It was just like a putty up one.
What was your food like that you were getting?
Tell us, I can't remember.
Was it? Basically,
basically wartime.
Was mail coming through to you?
It was catching up. Was now getting about maybe about 3 months behind. And
did you get much chance to meet the natives of the country?
No, not the
civilians.
They were kept out, they weren't allowed in the barracks up in Aleppo.
They didn't show any animosity towards
you?
No.
The Lebanese, when we were in the merger union, we had no contact with the civilians, more like kept themselves to themselves. And then all of a sudden, word came that whether we were called into Company HQ, and this is right, or he says, we're on an advance party. He says, we don't know where you're going, like, but we're going to move. The battalion's going to move again. And I says, we must have been walking up the desert, like. So one morning about, packed all our kit up, and all my boots from the signal, of course, I left with the signal stores. I said, put them in the panniers. I said, when you join me, I says, they'll come with you, like. All me, that was about half a dozen books that I wrote, you know, and the instruction and everything like. So we got on the wagons and off we went, like. And then I said, wonder where we're going on.
Do you know what comprised this advance party?
I don't know, tell us. There was me, Spatter, Sergeant Major Cairns, there was Lieutenant Craig and another officer. I can't remember him now. But we were all just in one wagon, all our kit and everything like. And then there was the other companies that. And we all went on, and we stopped at Haifa. We slept on the wagon. We didn't disembark. There was meals prepared for us, like. And then we left Haifa the following one. I don't know how long it took us to go to Haifa, and then we went on to Kantara on the Costa Canal. Went across there, and they says, right, if you have any money to change, he says, back at the Egyptian, or whatever money you had, like. So we had none, like. And so they says, right, off we went there. And we went on to Mwaska State, Kantara, and Mwaska wasn't very far away between each other. Been to Mwaska before. So I went on there, and we got on a train. Oh, I said, where are we going now? So we got on the train there, and we ended up in Alexandria. Oh, I said, we're going on a sea journey. So
you still had no inclination?
No inclination at all where we're going.
What date was this?
About September, 41. So we get into Alexander Lake and we get disembarked from the train, like, watch up the dockside. There's no troop ships here. There's no troop ships there. And there were some battleships and destroyers there. And all of a sudden, he marches up to this destroyer. You have to get on here. We've got this destroyer. I says, oh, crikey, where are we going now? And Chile wouldn't tell us where we're going. So, get on there. And we set off just on dark. Just started the dark. And what a trip that was. This destroyer, I've managed to burn all records. Because, boy, didn't I blow through that there. And seeing the sailors didn't know. He said, no, we can't tell you where they're going. Like. So we got a meal on board. Like.
So even on your journey, they still didn't tell you where
they
you were going?
They didn't tell everyone. Like.
Where were you accommodated on board on the ship?
Just on deck and below. Like. We've got a couple of good meals. There's Navy supplies, good meals. Like. Best we did for that for a long time. But, oh, that was a trip of a lifetime, that. I've never been on a boat as fast. Boy, I'm sure they were doing 45 knots. And they were ploughing through the... And that's bad, they're in a hurry, eh, like.
Were there other boats with you?
Other boats was there. There was two, I think. Another one. There was two of us altogether. And then, all of a sudden, about 6 o'clock in the morning, right... Get ready. And one sailor says, you know where you're at? He says, we have a clue. She's in Tobruk. And he said, so what they did, we pulled up the seaside, up to the campsite, put the plank down. He said, right, and the sailor said, get off, like, because it's becoming daylight. And he says, we don't want to be here. He says, you call this is Bomb Alley. And you know, with the last one that stepped off the gangplank, they up the plank, and it was away. I'm certain sure the propellers are gone before we got off the... off the gangplank, and away in the off. Ah.
Had you heard of Tobruk before?
No,
this?
We hadn't heard of Tobruk.
You didn't know what was going on there? Then what was your first view of it, getting off that boat? Was there any activity going on?
No, there's no activity at all.
Shelling and bombing?
No, we didn't. There was no, because it was just dawn. So they said, right over, pick up your gear, like, our old packs, and they had no kid bags, just no men. And off we set off marching, and we... And they've seen a lot of these films that show us the brook. We saw no buildings at all. So we just get outside the brook and we heard Jerry open up his guns, shell the harbour again. So we went and we more like went into a valley, a hillside, and we stopped there daily all day. And then there's some RSC. Brought some meals up for us, like, and I think we were there for a day and a half, and then we got the Australian guides came.
Did they brief you whilst you were in this valley, this place? Did they brief you then as to what, where you were and what you were going to do and what was intended?
They said they tell them that we're going to leave the Australians. Mm. And we said, well, we didn't know the Australians was in Tobruk. Mm. So we were there for a while, and then we got this guides. The being Spatter and the signal officer went up to, and the Sergeant Major Cairns, he went up to Company HQ, and they said, right, you will report there was a signal, Sergeant McLean was there. He says, come on, Sigs, come with me, the Australian.
He was the Australian Sergeant.
Australian Sergeant. He says, come on, I'll show you where you can bunk. And he says, you can either go in that duo or you can sleep on the top. And he they took us a couple of blankets. He said, right, or we'll see you. All right, like. So we had a walk round the HQ, like. And then we got to know the lads in there.
Can you describe where you were?
I can't tell you where we were. Because it was strange.
You say
I think we're more like in the centre section somewhere.
And where was the signals place?
It was well behind, because HQ company, Battalion HQ was well behind.
And what was it in, a hole?
It was in a hole in the ground. And we had to sleep on the top, or you could dig a slit trench and sleep in that if you want. And the fleas, loads of fleas, these blunders were, if you wrapped the, if you tried to take some of your clothes off, like, or to sleep, you're always itching all night. I'm certain sure they're full of fleas. So we kept our clothes on.
Mm.
And so we got well known to the, and then they showed us where each company was, and the communications. All they had was telephone, and it was a good system. And we found out that they had a line back to the Potato Brigade HQ down in Tobruk somewhere, and then they had a line to each company, and then they had a line from company to company to company, right, like an omnibus circuit system, because each company in the forward area had a small exchange, because they had lines out to each section.
Mm.
We found that out, and
were the cables buried or lying on the surface?
Some was buried, because when they started shelling, they had to go out and mend them. Like, so we hadn't much. It just used to go around more like routine, and visiting the forward companies, not the forward platoons, forward companies, and get to know the signal, the system they had working there, like. And so that's how it was in Tobruk. Then the battalion came.
You'll be with the Australians for a while. How did you get on with them?
Oh, got on very, very well with them. Even the signal officer, he was quite a good fella. He's a nice chap and all. Mm. And he says, when you're out in the open, he says, don't salute me. He says, you shoot me in the dark, or in the red. He says, don't shoot me on the open.
Oh, did he say why?
Because snipers, he says, snipers likes to pop off officers. He says, whether there's any snipers here or that, or he says, anywhere else. He says, you never know. There was some natives in the village, like, but whether what they were like, I don't know. We never contacted with them. But he said, don't salute me in the open.
Did he dress the same as everyone
yes.
else? Yes. There was no distinction?
Probably so, surely.
And the rest of the men, how did you get on with them?
Oh, quite well.
What kind of things were they saying to you? What kind of
things
were they telling
you? Oh, just asking where we come from and everything like that. And told us what they were. There was Bill Coffey, who was a sheep farmer. He had 20,000 acres of, and he had about 1 million sheep.
Mm.
He used to play his fiddle. He used to play his fiddle all the time. And this Llewellyn, I think it was. Alec Millen. He was an orchestra. He had an orchestra in a hotel in Sydney somewhere. And his wife used to write all the music. And then there was another chap. He owned a hotel.
And these men were in the ranks?
They were in the ranks, yes.
So what kind of class was the officer coming from?
Well, the normal class. He wasn't because I tell you, the officer, he was an ordinary lineman in Australia, and yet the privates was an inspector and engineers out the telephone. Mm. They said, "Oh, we didn't want to be officers."
Mm. How did they treat their own officers?
Oh, quite on first name. They were all on first name.
And did they eat together, or was
yes, they all ate together, didn't they? Whereas that's what they couldn't get to understand why Lieutenant Craig used to go and sit on his own.
What did they think of that?
Oh, they didn't like it at all. Oh, they used to say, "Why, it's so good to be that fella." He says, "Oh, you all one here." He says, "All together in one." And that's how it was all the time, like, and. We used to go and a spell on the exchange with the Australian fella, and then we maybe at when things were quiet, would visit the company HQ, because you could go there, because they were all in big in fortifications, in dug in the ground, you know, all concrete.
These were concreted
in the ground. These to hold to Brook defence was all a ring of defences. Mm. And they were about nearly 10 foot below ground. Mm.
And were these First World War type of trenches, or were these divided or split?
Just at Company HQ had a concrete bunker, like a concrete trench, about from here, well, from here to the bottom of the garden, and built maybe this wide.
What kind of length is that?
Huh?
What kind of length
about,
is that?
About 30 feet. Mm. And there was observation. You could look out over the top. Like there was like slits there to look outside, but very rare. And there was an exchange down there, and they had lines out to their forward platoons.
Did you get to see the forward defences?
Not
the very forward
not
ones.
Not till we went to our own battalion. We never went out with the Australians there. They wouldn't let us go out. Mm. And we visited each one, and they told us what communications they had. And they had, it was there. They formed a good system, because some of the Derna side, that was the Derna side, and the, what was the other one? The east side. On it, big scrap like that, and they had that man could ring up there, and he could speak to him through there,
through the loop.
It was there. The company there, there's threefold companies, and they had a line between each through there. They had a line back to each battalion, battalion HQ, and the forward was the same. Each platoon could talk to another platoon. And you could, we could ring from here, and we could ring the next, the other regiment, if we wanted to. And that was only the single lines, and it was also twin lines. They put all, I think they used a lot of jury wire and everything to put this to Australians on, like. It hadn't been earth return. So it was double wire. Mm.
So what's the advantage of double wire, twin lines?
Well, in the desert, see, the earth, you have to keep the earth wet. Mm. And that was all right until the battalion came. And then we went up into the... We didn't take over that section. We went over into the Derna section.
When you were with the Australians, were they telling you what kind of things, what kind of fighting that they'd had?
Oh, aye.
What the Germans were like?
What they'd done, and they told us all about this tank, the artillery, blasting the tanks, and when jury, I think it was a set the section where it tried to come through, or so there was a road through the middle.
And the artillery had hit?
Artillery had fired on them a hope of sights, and jury had withdrawn back. Mm. But he didn't do much attacking after that. It was more like our people that was doing the fighting patrols and everything that went out. And
so when your own battalion came through, you moved up to the Derna section.
Derna section.
What was it like there?
It was more like a hillside. And it went over the top, and there was also a lot of communication trenches. And I think we found out the lines was all right. Very rare. We went out to the company. I think it was about twice we went out to mend the line. And when we found out the line wasn't broken, they weren't answering the phone. Mm.
Did you have a similar system as the Australians had?
We took that system over. Because we took everything over. They went, the telephones and the exchanges, we took all of them over. They left them in situ. Mm. But then the Derna side, as I said, we took this cave over. That's where the battalion HQ and the signal platoon were, what was left of the line people and everything.
You say it was on a hillside. Where were the Germans in relation to your position?
Forward.
And were they on the top of the hill or beyond it?
Beyond it, I think. We're like more like an escarpment. And then they went forward. It wasn't like a hill. It was more like an escarpment. See, you come through and they went up like that. And then went level again.
So you were in on what they call the reverse side of the
yes,
escarpment.
Yes, sir.
And the Germans were ahead.
You often used to come over with these fighter bombers and that. There's more like... There was only, I think, twice they came over, the Stukas. And that was when we were in the sympathetic section. We left the Derner side and we went over... We went in reserve. And then we went into the centre section.
Before we go there, did you see much activity in the Derner section?
No. I didn't see it.
The battalion did. Was it having any...
They were just more like defensive and just saw ordinary patrols going out.
What kind of food were you getting in these situations?
Hardtack. It was more like soups. These McConaughey's. Yeah, the tin stuff, mostly tin stuff. Bully beef stew and everything like. Because, this is further on still. Then we bought this centre section, and we, in that centre section, there was an old Italian artillery gun. The Pioneer Corps, was it the fire? Was the mortar platoon? They used to fire it. Then behind us was the 25 pounders. We found out the one company wanted hard earn. He says, no, it would be a good idea. He said, having one line, we'll put two lines out to each company, but take a small, like, different route. So that's what we did. And then also, he said, the signal officer, who was the signal? I can't remember. Who was the signal sergeant, boy, then? Or did Brown? I can't remember. He said, no, to be all right, Andy, instead of talking messages over, we'd put the fuller phone on. It was a fuller phone. Never been used for years, and we knew all about it, like. So what you do, it's a fuller phone that you can speak over the line and also send a Morse code at the same time. And instead of it's a system where you press the key, it doesn't make the call. It's when it comes back. When the key comes back, it sends the call, the signal out.
Is that an advantage?
Oh, yes.
In what way?
It's like a buzzer. And you can't intercept it unless you've got a fuller phone at the other end. You used to fasten it on the side of the exchange. And I think there was only two of us who could rig them up, you know, to fit them, because we'd learnt them in when I was in India, the fuller phones. And yet we'd never used them in the 1st Battalion.
Had you retained them as equipment?
Yeah, we'd got them off the Australians. But they never used them. They didn't use them. So we decided to use them, and they come in handy. And they were sharper by, because instead of interrupting, send the message over by word of mouth, they could still have a conversation, and if any messages come, we could send it through on the operator, send the full phone message. And we also could, if you plugged it in, and you could send it, say, the three forward companies, could send the same message at the same time to the three forward companies.
Was this an efficient instrument?
It was very efficient. If used properly, the persons that could use them, because not everybody could use them, because they'd never been learnt on them.
When you set this system up, did you do that at night? You would have to move out and put cables in and so forth?
No, it was the same. We used the same telephone line. We used the same telephone line as speech from the exchange. All we had to do was just connect a lead from the line terminal to the fuller phone and then put an earth out. Because it never interfered with the exchange. But the only time you, because when you used to ring through, if you want to send a message, the operator would send a message here, fuller phone. I would just say fuller phone, and he would, and then when, now this end, say I was at this end, at the HQ end, and he would send A company would send the letter A, and then I would press the key, and then release it, and he would stop sending. Then B would come in. Then I would set up, send the message. So many call signs, I'll put A, B, C, A, B, C. Then I'll say, then start the message, just normal message.
Were there any other methods that you used for your signalling and communications into Brook?
No, that's all. Speech messages. You said the CO, you talk to the company commanders. Then one day the out in a place called, you've heard about it, have you, Plunk. So they decided to send a listening post out forward of C Company, I think, yes, C Company. And so they sent me up to C Company and the headquarters with some cable like, and a telephone. So I said, right, I will go to this listening post. So one of the NSO from the section that was put the listening post out. So we went out there, and we had to crawl on our hands and knees. And had to oil the cable drum well, in case it squeaked, like, and we got out to there, like.
Did you do this at night or during the day?
At night time, And we couldn't even hear the judges talking. So behind it, we just whispered, like, and I told them, I said, no, I said, we'll not even, I said, we won't press the buzzer. I said, we won't even ring the bell on it, because there's a bell and a buzzer on the telephone. And I said, all we'll do, we'll just talk. And I said, no, keep the head, we could put at least two headphones, and some headphones on the one that, one of the, wasn't a signaler, it was just one of the sections. No, I says, you keep them headphones on. I said, you'll hear somebody talking to you. Right. So, right over comes back. And gets back to company HQ, so I'll test it, like, so just plugs in, and says, hello, no answer, no answer. Oh, great, now what's gone? So follows the line out, like, he was half asleep, he was asleep, he says, I haven't heard you. So the company, Keith, he says, hello, he says, well, everyone at charge. So what happened, I don't know. It worked out after that.
Plunk, what was Plunk?
Well, it was only like a name for a place.
Was like it held by the Germans?
Held by the Germans, aye. And the Italians. Then another time we went out, what did I go out for? Oh, we went out with the ration truck. They decided to send the ration truck forward to the company with barrels of water and that. So the truck went up all right, like, and they had me to guide them up to where this platoon was, because I said, well, I said, you need to go, I said, the white tape where the mines and that are, through the minefield, right, all right. So he gets up there and gets the barrels off for the lads for the water. And the bloke called Ireland, he was with the truck, and as we turned round to go back, like, I says, well, we'll ride on the run board. He says, oh, we'll be on the run board. Oh, I says, right, all right. So I goes back in there, jumps in the back of the wagon, like, nice, flat down. We hadn't gone 20 yards, so woof. Oh, I says, we've been hit with a shell. Then I heard him, Ireland, moaning like hell. I says, oh, what's somebody? And it'd gone over a mine. The driver had gone off. And whether they'd lost his legs, I don't know, but I never saw him no more after he got back, broke on Isle, and that could have been me. So I had to leave the truck.
Did you move all, was it night?
All was at night, forward.
No movement during the night?
We could move up to the company HQ at during the day, but the forward of that, you couldn't move to forward. And They sent me to, I was nearly all lineman, line NCO at the time. I was doing the lines. And then we had another line to put out to A Company. Paddy Mayer broke out, Captain Mayer. And there was something called. We went from that. He says, "No, we says he was in a signal officer. I've been a signal officer, Paddy Mayer." He says, "No, we says I want a good line put out to that forward section, like." So we put him on, and we had to do oil the drum up again. And just before we got finished, it started to squeak. So we had to stop.